Welcome to Community Alert. Not if, but when. Positive preparation for disaster with Ted Adams and Mike Williams, keeping you informed on how to get ready and be prepared. Tuesdays at 11 a.m. and 9 p.m. and Saturdays at 1 p.m. on AM 1290, the Santa Barbara News Press radio station.
Hey, folks, welcome to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams. And today we're visiting with Susan Vanderpool. And she is the head of an organization and the founder of an organization called Families of the Fallen. And they're involved with supporting families of firefighters that have fallen in the line of duty and fallen for many reasons. And so, Mike, you've got something for us to begin with.
Well, Susan, thank you very much for taking time out to be with us. We'll get to you in just a minute on what I think is one of the more important issues confronting the fire service today. It's not talked about. A couple of announcements here. First, from Santa Barbara County Fire Department, drought conditions worsen for sections of California. According to the National Weather Service, the latest U.S. drought monitor released this morning that depicts portions of California as being exceptional D4 drought. This is the worst drought category in the drought monitor and for the first time has been used in California since this monitoring system began in 2000. Santa Barbara County is in drought impact level D3, extreme drought. And I should paraphrase it. This was back on January 30th. The drought monitor I posted on Nextdoor, and it's also at wildlandresidents.org. Fire danger levels in Santa Barbara County remain high. Live fuel moisture levels remain at critical levels. However, they are slowly starting to rise. Even as live fuel moistures begin to rise, winds can overcome elevated fuel moistures and create rapid rates of fire spread. Santa Barbara County Fire Department urges people to use caution in the coming months, and that's true of all the fire departments. Everyone's on edge right now about the potential out here.
Absolutely.
Public safety announcement, Santa Barbara County Fire Department candle safety tips. Believe it or not, candles are a cause of a lot of the fires here locally. Extinguish all candles when leaving the room before going to sleep. For these tips and others, contact Santa Barbara County Fire Department or their website at sbcfire.com. And finally, red flag warning text alerts are now available. Santa Barbara County Office of Emergency Management has partnered with local fire officials to create text messaging systems for local residents when a red flag warning is issued in Santa Barbara County. Residents can simply text the word red flag, that's REDFLAG, to 888-777. That's 888-777. By receiving the message from emergency officials, residents in high fire hazards can increase their awareness and vigilance. For further information on that, you can contact sbcfire.com. And on programming notes, we've got some great guests coming up. Next week on the 11th, Ethan Turpin, the son of a retired Santa Barbara County Battalion Chief, will be talking about burn cycles, sharing land with wildfire. This also ties into a program going on at UCSB next week. So Ethan will be joining us to talk about that. On the 18th, and completely remarkable story. Chief Ben Ho, who just recently retired from the State Fire Marshal's Office, was one of the original Vietnamese boat people. He and his brother came into the United States under the most adverse of circumstances. His brother went on and became a physician and well-known surgeon, and Ben went to engineering school, became an engineer, and is well-known in the fire prevention fire world for his work. Ben Ho will be coming on to talk about what that entire trail was like. And then on the 25th, TalkRadioBuilder.com, Ken Swanson will be joining us. He's from Northern California. He kind of has a competing show of sorts on the building industry in Northern California. He will be joining us again. That's on the 25th. And with that, let's get into today's show. Ted.
Well, Susan, I know that your husband was a L.A. City firefighter, and he died in the line of duty in 2005, and that inspired you, and some of the circumstances surrounding that that tragedy inspired you to start the Families of the Fallen. And I wish you'd just talk to us a little bit about that and how you got involved and how, what your path has been like.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Ted. I'm always so grateful to be able to talk about this and have such a platform. It's so appreciated, and I get excited to talk about it, obviously. The difficult side, of course, was that my husband passed away. He was a Los Angeles City firefighter for more than 20 years. And the scenario was that his station house was called to a hazmat scenario. There was a physical rescue in progress, and they were waiting on the scene for hazmat to arrive, and it circumstances just worked out to where my husband was asked to go down into an underground tank to pull out a couple of men who had been found unconscious. And he said he would go in like any firefighter would and went down. He only had his turnouts on and breathing apparatus, but went in and pulled the gentleman out. They were pronounced dead on the scene. He was checked out and released and confirmed good to go. There was an oily residue in the tank that was not identified at the time. And so about a week later, we ended up going on a weekend retreat, the two of us, over there to Cambria near you guys. And he started feeling like he was catching a cold or the flu, and those symptoms progressed over the next year into some severe difficulties speaking, and his left arm began to atrophy. He continued on going to work and working at the station house, had some doctor's visits. Nobody could decide what his diagnosis should be. Until one day he called me from the firehouse and was distraught, as you could imagine, telling me that they were sending him home because he could not communicate well enough anymore, and they were concerned about his safety and concerned for the safety of his brothers there at the firehouse. So he came home, and we made some phone calls, again, trying to push through the system, and we ended up at the hospital and going through a barrage of tests that took quite a long time. And because nobody wanted to diagnose, of course, what he had, and it turned out he had Lou Gehrig's disease, also known as ALS. And so what followed, boy, we could go on for a really long time, all the tentacles that experience stretched out into, but he survived for 4 years and was one of those firefighters who was very, very beloved and was a very quiet leader and was often asked to promote, and he was acting captain a lot and AO and engineer, and just, you know, in hindsight, being 2020, he decided not to promote because of all the testing it would require and all the time it would take away from his family. So in hindsight, that was a great decision, and he made it to all the kids' ball games and concerts and church functions, and so that's a real treasure to us. And so 2005, he passed away. His diagnosis was the first duty-related diagnosis of Lou Gehrig's disease that we knew about. And since then, that diagnosis has helped some other firefighters, I understand, a police officer or two, and I've heard some stories of possibly some military personnel being helped by that diagnosis and the line of duty relationship that they gave that. So it was a tough call, but we're grateful.
Did they discover that the substance, the oily substance in the tank, was responsible for the Lou Gehrig's?
Yeah, you know, that was a tough call, and the department neurologist that finally ended up diagnosing Bob said he was not willing to connect those two, but he used the words possibly light up that situation. So it's very, very difficult to, you know, I mean, if somebody discovered what it was connected to, then a cure would probably be on the way of some sorts. But I did some skeletal research and started connecting some dots to quench oil. And there was quench oil in that tank. It was used to heat treat metal parts for airplanes. Mm-hmm. And he did get some of it on his skin. But I found some relation to diagnosis of ALS because quench oil contains benzene, and that's responsible for neurodegenerative disease and death in some cases. So I did a little bit of homework, but that was as far as we went. We had my husband and family and friends and a whole fire department that loved him and our children, and we needed to focus on him and what we're going to do. But we're, again, so grateful.
Well, Susan, we're going to have to take a break right now. We're going to get right back with you, and we'll continue with this in just a moment. Thanks.
Ted Adams, Mike Williams, and the ever-different David Jay on the board with us today. Community Alert, not if, but when. Positive preparation for disaster. Live on KZSB AM 1290, or Santa Barbara News Press Radio, and simulcasting at newspress.com.
Hey, folks, welcome back to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams. And today we're visiting with Susan Vanderpool. And she is the founder of the Families of the Fallen. And we're getting into what exactly that is. And we'll be talking about that this hour. And thanks so much, Susan, for joining us. And riotous equivalent of a radio show that we have here. Michael.
Like you, as always, there's more going on out between the breaks and on the air. Let me get your website out, familiesofthefallen.net. That's familyofthefallens.net, fallen, mm-hmm. singular. And a couple of stats here to reinforce why this is important. U.S. Fire Administration reporting in 2013, 101 firefighters were killed in the line of duty. 42 of those volunteer, 30 of those career. And that's kind of a misleading statistic because 75 to 80% of all the fire service in the United States is volunteer. So 25% mm-hmm. Of the career fire service lost 29%.
So fatalities. If you have, let me get this right, you got volunteers and then you've got career firefighters. There must be some other designation because...
Well, it depends on who you talk to and who's a volunteer. And a volunteer really infers that everybody's doing it free grad, and that's not entirely true. There's paid call, there's seasonal, there's part-time casual, there's 50-percenters, there's all kinds of different terms for all of this.
Okay.
But then you have your career FTE, which is what we're talking about here today, although it can be anybody. And I think part of why this is important is when line of duty deaths, whether they be a career individual who has the support system that the city of Los Angeles has for its police and fire, or you've got the Billy Bob Fire Brigade up in the back hills, the end result for the family is the same, but the support isn't necessarily there. And I think that's why Susan's project is so important.
Well, what I'm thinking is that we were talking earlier about how many firefighters in all categories there are, and somewhere around 2 million in the United States. So when you take a look at 100 firefighters dying out of that 2 million, we're doing pretty well protecting our firemen.
Until it happens to you. And we've had...
Well, of course. I mean, then it would be 100% as far as I was concerned. But
but Susan, after the initial issues, why did you decide it was necessary to start an organization of support? Because I applaud you for doing it, but can you explain to the audience why that was important?
Sure. Well, you know, I had not been a widow before and had not experienced... that type of loss before. I'd experienced some loss, parents and a friend, so I had understood grief from that perspective, but losing a spouse was completely unique to me, and there were some vulnerability issues that I hadn't counted on there. Being a woman, now I was single, and I ended up speaking with other women who had lost their husbands, and you know, you were talking about stats. The incredible stats on widowhood means tells us that 75% of all women will be widowed at least once. So out of the 13 million of U.S. widows and widowers, out of that 13 million, 11 million of those are widows, are women. And so that is sobering. I didn't know that until I began investigating for this protocol. But so I began to live through those vulnerabilities and who do I trust? I needed help. And I knew that I wanted to ask for help from somebody that I trusted, either from within the fire department or from within the church body that I belong to. I noticed that there was a lot of help and phone calls the first few weeks. And then after that, I was a little bit on my own, even with an extraordinary fire department like Los Angeles City, and they're the cream of the crop, and I love them all. They didn't know what to do. So here was the scenario. I needed to know what, say, a PSOB benefit was, or I needed to know why the pension department wasn't communicating with the workman's comp people, and my tile was falling off in my bathroom, and every time I walked by it, I fell apart because it reminded me that my husband wasn't there. But I wasn't going to look in the yellow pages. I needed help from somebody that I trusted. But everybody said, call. But honestly, it was pretty difficult to get up and brush my teeth. And that's not uncommon in grief. It's difficult just to take the next step. And so I started thinking, well, I could call some of the firefighters who said to call, but is that going to be awkward for them if they're married? are they going to be feeling awkward to call me because I'm single and now they're married? What will they tell their wife? How often is it okay for them to call? How often is it okay for them to come over and work on my bathroom? Who could tell me about a PSOB benefit or educational benefit? And I talked with some women who didn't even know how to use their ATM card, you know, and so, I began thinking about this vulnerable position and why people weren't helping, and it's difficult for anyone to look into grief or to look away from grief when to grieve properly, it involves being able to express your grief, having someone listen, and allowing them to respond to that. On the flip side, I also knew that firefighters were grieving because it's one of the closest-knit groups there are out there. And so they were grieving, but they didn't have a way to express their grief without compromising all that's masculine about being a firefighter. And so they didn't want to tell anybody that they're grieving. PTSD scenarios are on the rise. Firefighter suicide is on the rise. And these guys were having trouble dealing with the death of their dear friend. So I thought, well, if they needed a way to express their grief and to help, to have a model, something that was already set in place, that's going to alleviate a lot of the difficulties between that odd, vulnerable, cultural, societal awkwardness. Well, does a widow call the man? Does the man call the widow? How often does he go over? And who is he going to be accountable to? Is anybody keeping track of any of this? Is there anybody to answer to? And if they say they'll get me some help and then forget about it because life goes on, that is another slap in the face, so to speak, to a widow's grief. So there are a lot of issues coming from a lot of different avenues. So that fed into my desire to think, wow, if I'm going through this, and I had a tremendous support system from my church and a small community and multiple fire departments offering to help, but there was no protocol, there was no plan. And men, you know it, men need a plan. And they don't want to walk into a chaotic situation without a plan, especially firefighters. You don't go to a fire without a plan.
Well, and that's true. Now, in the city, in the case of the city of Los Angeles, you have the city itself, you have the union, and you also have a very strong benevolent association.
Yes.
All three of those organizations are there for these kinds of situations.
Yep.
How difficult was it for you to get the kind of services that you needed from those three?
I have to tell you, the hearts were there to help. I had a few initial phone calls. This is what this will look like. This is what this will look like. And call me if you need help. But that was pretty much it. I'll be honest with you. Just tremendous hearts wanting to help. I can't say enough about LA City. They went to bat for us when they wanted to take my husband's benefits away and things like that. They went to bat for us and got that for me so that the kids and I are taken care of financially. And that was one of the greatest gifts they could ever give. But as far as a long term, they had the short term, and they had we gave a tremendous amount of help for the funeral and supported us financially through that. That was tremendous, tremendous. But after that, that's where this protocol, the Families of the Fallen protocol, steps in. And it's initiated by the firefighters, and the whole idea of it is that it's preemptively put into place. So department resources are sought out and logged before fatality occurs, because more than any other profession, fatalities are going to happen within the fire service. So it's a good thing to be prepared. So this whole protocol is put into place, as I said, preemptively. The resources are gathered any way that a fire department wants to gather them. LA City has a system called SASE. It's a database. And when a firefighter has his physical annually, they update that information. And so that is just a kind of peripheral view on how they do that. But there was not another fire department or firefighter that I spoke to that had anything that walked down the road with a widow like Families of the Fallen does. And so we put that into place, and it tapers off because firefighter widows like to stand on their own, like most widows do.
Well, Susan, we're up to our next break here. Your website again, familiesofthefallen.net. Ted Adams, Mike Williams, David Jay on the slide tots for us. Community Alert, Not If But When, Positive Disaster. KCSB, AM 1290.
Hey, folks, welcome back to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams. And today we're visiting with Susan Vanderpool, who is a founder of an organization called the Families of the Fallen, having to do with firefighters' tragedy. And we're talking with her about all facets of that. Mike.
Well, Susan, I want to get in talk a little bit about your thoughts regarding volunteers, seasonal, part-time type of folks, which comprise a good 75% minimum of the United States Fire Service and a good 45% of California's Fire Service.
Yep.
It's a different world for them. They don't have a big machine backing them up. They're not part of a union. They're not part of benevolent associations. Many of them belong to, say, like the California State Firefighters Association or National Volunteer Fire Council or something like that. But these are not organizations that are in and of themselves designed to support a family in the case of a death.
Yep.
What are your experiences in working with volunteers and seasonal folks?
I'll say that when I've spoken to firefighters in large groups, there are the volunteer firefighters present there, grateful, tearfully grateful that there's a protocol, that there's something that they can implement and begin to use, even on a small scale, even when they don't have the big unions backing them up. They can easily go to this website. It's A, B, and C. Put this website into place, gather the resources that they have from within their fire department or trusted community members, and put them into place. Name someone who's going to be in charge. On the website, there is everything any department, big or small, could possibly need. There's communication logs and follow-up resources and logs to put the widow's information and even school information for the kids to keep an eye out for them if they need any help there. So it, on that scale, small or big, this protocol can be implemented easily by anyone. They wouldn't even need me to begin putting it into place.
So, Susan, what we were talking about earlier in an earlier segment and all the support that you got from the department, it sounded like most of that support was economic and not emotional. Mm-hmm. And it sounded to me as if what you were needing was the emotional support and some sort of surcease in your tragedy. And it sounded like perhaps that's what you're shooting for with the Families of the Fallen, is to give more than just the economic support.
Yeah, you know, that's interesting you say that, because a big part of a widow's grieving process has to do with the practical, pragmatic, everyday issues of life. So, and part of girding her up is going to be a phone call to say, this is so-and-so from the department. I'm working through the auspices of this Families of the Fallen protocol, and I'm going to call you. I'm going to call you every couple of weeks for these first 4 months, and I'm going to ask you what you need. Because on the whole, a widow has emotional support by them. She has a family or a faith-based organization alongside her work camaraderie to help her with the emotional side of it. And that was part of what firefighters were shying away from a little bit. They were uncomfortable with being a widow's shoulder to cry on. And honestly, if someone could have helped me with the paperwork and workman's comp and what does this term mean and the practical things of, can someone fix my sprinklers because my grass is dying, and those types of things, that those practical issues are going to help gird up my emotional issues. And in a way, I'll say, look at it like this. If in your marriage you speak German and your wife speaks Japanese, you can tell her all day long that you love her in German, but she doesn't speak German. She only speaks Japanese. So you have to learn her language, and she has to learn your language for it to be any good. And so that's where Families of the Fallen has come in, and that's why it's been such a success across the country. The firefighters embrace it because, again, they don't have to compromise as a firefighter. They want to help. They want to get their hands into it.
Well, how has your program been received, and how are you getting the word out to all these fire agencies throughout the country?
Yep. I think primarily, you know, for me, through prayer. I knew that God had given it to me, and I knew that He was going to open the doors. But I'll also say, on my part, it took lots of knocking on doors. Initially, I presented the abstract for the idea to our local union president, Local 112 there in L.A. City, Pat McCosker down there, and he was emotionally apologetic that, A, he had never thought of those issues, and, B, they weren't doing any of those things that were needed. So he presented that to the IFF National Convention, where it was unanimously accepted. That was the biggest door initially. And so I spoke twice to the Honor Guard there at the Fallen Firefighter Memorial, and they began spreading this news. If one department uses it, and say, as is often the case, a widow lives outside the parameter of that city or county's help, there would be another fire department there to help her in case of an emergency. And that's of course, the dream, to have the whole country using it. It seems to be on its way right now. Being able to speak at different venues, I had the honor of a keynote at the ICISF World Congress, social media, phone consults, individual firehouses. My husband and I, my now husband, he's known as one of the nation's experts on PTSD and workplace violence and trauma and leadership training. And we had an incredible opportunity and blessing to visit with the Wayne County Fire Department last year. They had lost a firefighter. And we went in and walked them through this protocol. And not only did we get to sit with the firefighters, but their wives were there. So we got to talk with them what was normal about grief, what was abnormal, what to look for, how to help the widow of this firefighter, and brought their fire department together in a way that they hadn't known before. And that was a tremendous blessing and an honor, and we're still in touch with those guys, and they're doing really well. So word of mouth, social media is a new one for me, LinkedIn, tremendous response, and a lot of trainers that work for ICISF or other entities that talk about PTSD and how to gird your first responders up are using this protocol whenever they present on anything having to do with PTSD or firefighter suicides or trauma, crisis, and grief. Also, fire departments are beginning to use it as part of their rookie orientation program. So when the rookies come through, they present this protocol and say, if something happens to you, this is what we're going to do.
Well, along those lines, what suggestions do you have for spouses, because there's women in the fire service also, to be prepared for the potential that your loved one may not come home?
Yeah. I think primarily have something that would act as a support system for you. Have a close system of friends, belong to a faith-based organization, and be involved in that community that is the fire department. But I think I don't want to sound trite, but being knowledgeable and finding out for yourself what you have to do financially, what the possible legal ramifications would be for a fatality within the fire department, and champion something like this, a protocol that's going to help other widows if they run into the same issue. But part of recovering under any circumstance, part of somebody's healing is an optimistic outlook that life has meaning. And I don't want to get ethereal, but that's proven by research, that there's something bigger than oneself and that there's a future. And so if the statistics say 75% of all women will be widowed, it's something we need to be talking about. And the firefighters need to be talking about it too, as long as they're not threatened.
Well, let's hold that thought for a minute, Susan. We're on Community Alert. Ted Adams, Mike Williams, David Jay on the board for us. Not if, but when. Positive preparation for disaster. Live at newspress.com on KZSB AM 1290.
Hey, folks, welcome back to Commuter Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams, and today we're visiting with Susan Vanderpool, who is a founder of an organization called Families of the Fallen, supporting widows after their spouses died with after disaster and the fire department and that sort of thing. And so, Mike.
Well, when we think of line of duty deaths, we're thinking of people that fall through roofs or fall through flooring, or there's explosions, burns, respiratory issues. But more commonly, it's heart attacks, strokes, getting hit by cars, and secondary things that occur at the fire ground. But one of the things that's very rarely talked about in the fire service is suicides. Now, law enforcement and the military, the intelligence community, that's pretty open discussion nowadays. Mm-hmm. But in the fire service doesn't really deal with that. And I think that that's something that you also have taken on, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. It's humbling, and I'm so honored and grateful. I know I hadn't anticipated having to deal with that, but I had become certified in a few areas, crisis and trauma and grief, and I had a little bit of background in that, suicide prevention, and a few years ago, more than a few years ago, maybe 5 years ago, I received a call from the president of a large local within the fire service, and he had just had a suicide within his department, and he wanted to know if it would be practical to use this protocol to help his family. And, of course, everyone was reeling, and he confided in me, and it's not confidential anymore, but they had had 13 interdepartmental suicides in the previous 3 years. And so it's definitely an issue that people are looking at. I'm really excited to be partnering with Firefighter Behavioral Health Alliance and Jeff Dill, and they're starting to keep statistics about firefighter suicides, but it's not something that's publicized a great deal. But so, yes, this protocol is not only something that can be implemented after fatality, even a suicide within the department, but it's a great, wonderful medicine, I would say, for those firefighters who are grieving either from a duty-related or on-the-job death or a death from suicide within their department. This is going to, again, give them a way to grieve, a way to reach out and help the family of that fallen firefighter. And that's going to primarily help them face the next trauma they're going to encounter. And it's certain that they will encounter future trauma, things that the rest of us will never, ever have to deal with in our lives. But they have to deal with it day in, day out. So, again, if they have something in place, a way that they can express their grief, it's going to gird them up, help them to heal, and turn them into a more resilient firefighter, and that's going to make for a more resilient fire department and local, and everyone's going to be safer.
Well, I know in the law enforcement, military, and fire community, those are, I call them team sports, if you will. Everybody's working together, and they have to work together. And if something happens and somebody's seriously injured or killed, there's a bit of a guilt complex that develops really rapidly amongst those individuals that feel like, well, they should have been there, or they should have done something, or they didn't pay attention to the radio, or if they'd only done this, or we'd only parked there, or if we'd only put the ladder here versus there, or if we'd gone into the back door versus the front door. I mean, there's all this what-if scenario that goes on. And that starts to weigh heavy on folks in this business. And counseling is certainly one aspect, but from your perspective, what suggestions do you have for the guys that are listening that are on the job? How do you try to prevent getting sucked into that that abyss? There's no coming out of that.
Yeah. Well, again, having a meaningful life is carries more weight than you would think. But also, like I was saying, have a plan in place. For the guys, keep an eye out on each other. And if you don't want to ask your brother, how you doing, how are you handling that, one of the best ways I've ever discovered and learned from my training is, hey, how is your wife dealing with this? Or, hey, how is so-and-so dealing with this? And that can open up a line of communication. Because the firefighter's then, he's not talking about himself or what he's grieving or how he's dealing with it emotionally, but he is talking about it. So getting it out and, again, talking about it is primary. And being able to express that grief and having someone respond is really quite instrumental. in the healing of a firefighter.
I'm curious, as a wife, when your husband started at the fire department, did he start at LA City Fire?
He did, yep.
Okay.
He did.
So he went through the fire tower, and he was working for LA City. How long did it take you as a wife to realize that this was not going out and putting out fires, that this job was much more than that? When did the reality strike?
You know, it certainly didn't strike at rookie orientation. They gave us the statistics,
no.
The divorce statistics, you know,
yep.
And the likelihood of a fatality, especially with a big department like LA City. But I don't think it really, really hit home until he worked at dispatch. And he came home and would tell me about the stories that he heard. People calling in, it was the 911, and it used to be LA City, it used to be under City Hall down there. And he was bilingual, and so was promoted to that seat there. But he had a hard time just hearing the emotions of the people over the telephone. And some of it was as gruesome more gruesome than I had ever imagined. And so he was really blessed to have a very close group of firefighters that he was friends with. And again, a very, very close group within our church body. And he was a really godly man and trusted God for his strength. But I think it hit me then, to be honest. This wasn't turning the hose on and putting the flames out.
Well, it's when you're having to deal with the reality of what this world has out there, that the police and fire and the medical community and public health, there's a variety of people, even school teachers for that matter, who are on the front lines in many ways in urban America.
Yeah.
In dealing with the reality of the world that we've got before us, and there's not a lot anybody can do about it. I suspect that's, for me anyway, that was one of the most frustrating aspects of it. What am I doing, and why am I doing it, and why am I subjecting myself to something that doesn't have any immediate solution to it? Now, going out and putting out fires in and of itself, that's pretty straightforward, but that's not what the job is anymore.
Mm.
I guess you could argue it never really was.
Mm-hmm. Well said.
But I think you bring up a very important thing, and you basically said have a life. Have something outside of your organization. Have something outside of just doing your job, the mechanics of the job. Don't let it become so encompassing that if you don't have it anymore, you become a wreck. And we see that today with folks that are retiring. Now, that's kind of a different environment, but are you kind of seeing the same type of emotional issues with guys that have done this for 30, 40 years and they're now retiring? It's many of the same issues, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Well, it is many of the same issues. And any time I encounter somebody who's grieving, and grief has to do with any type of loss. It just doesn't just have to do with the loss of a life. And so with the fire department, it encompasses so many different aspects of a man or woman's life that it digs its tentacles in a little deeper, I would say, than even most occupations or any other workplace. So, yeah, it would involve making sure you have other things going on and not just finding your identity solely as a firefighter. But that's tough because being a firefighter is quite an incredible calling and the ideal of many people in our country. So can't knock that.
Well, you know, it's one of the few occupations where you live with the people you work with. And you have that in the military. You have that in some aspects of the oil industry and what have you, where you're living in close quarters. But that makes it very unique. So you become a second family. So the emotional ties that you have with the people that you work with are more in a family environment than it is in an office or corporate environment.
Yeah. Thank you for saying that. Yeah.
Because anyway, we're up to our next break here, visiting today with Susan regarding the program that she has, Families of the Fallen. Their website, familiesofthefallen.net. They're based in Michigan. And their phone number is 661-472-1991. 661-472-1991. Up to our next break, Ted Adams, Mike Williams on Community Alert. Not if, but when. Positive preparation for disaster. Here we go.
Hey, folks, welcome back to Community Alert. This is our final segment. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams. This morning we've been talking with Susan Vanderpool, a very interesting program. She's a founder of an organization called Families of the Fallen, dealing with problems that widows encounter after their husbands have passed away in the line of duty. And so it's been really great, Susan, and we want to hear some more about maybe you can just give us some ideas about how people can get in touch with you if they want more information. I know your website, but they may be looking for something more personal. Maybe you could advise us on that.
Sure, no problem. Well, the website primarily, and they can get in touch with me there. They can also email me at FF, as in firefighter, FF hyphen at support at hotmail.com. So FF hyphen support at hotmail.com. I'm also on LinkedIn, and I'm on several different websites as a speaker. I speak at church events and women's retreats and things like that. I do teachings, and I can consult with fire departments, have a phone call, visit your fire department, help you set this protocol in place, or walk you through some of the signposts of grief and when to start worrying and questions to ask and what's normal and what to look for that new normal up ahead for someone who's lost their spouse, because it will never return to normal as they knew it, and they won't get over it. Part of this protocol is helping someone get through their grief.
Do you deal at all with anticipated grieving, when perhaps a firefighter is ill, or and talking to the possible widow and helping her prepare for that eventuality?
Yes, and you know, it's difficult to say that's one of my favorite things to do, or I love doing that, because it's such a devastating circumstance. And I, you know, when I write to fire departments, I apologize, because I really wish that they would never have to use this protocol. But yes, I address that.
Well, you lived through it, and you're one of the few that have, and I think it's important that you share some of your knowledge.
Thank you. And widows, they're thrown for a loop, and so my heart was always to be able to speak for somebody who couldn't speak for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so God has opened those doors, and I am blessed. I have a book coming out that's going to be talking a little bit more about that with Morgan James Publishing under their Face imprint, and that'll be out hopefully in December. And so at the back of that book is going to be information about this protocol. That way a widow is kind of armed, you know, so to speak, as she's walking through that journey of grief, and then she's saying to herself, what next? Where is my identity? Here's something I can champion.
Susan, I know maybe you won't want to really get into this much, but something that has occurred to me. Do you deal at all with substance abuse?
I do not personally, nope.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Nope, and
that's certainly a precursor to something.
It is. I mean, there's definitely a warning sign there, especially when it comes to suicide. But I know that in all high-profile, high-energy jobs, that's something that does pop up, and so
it does indeed. And we didn't get into it today, we're running out of time, but cancer is another issue, and people that contract cancer and the prolonged process that all takes, and that weighs very heavy on people that work in this business also, because they see their workmates slowly deteriorating, ultimately not being able to hold the job and everything that comes with it. So
Very difficult.
And again, that gets back to the issue of have a life. Have something else going on other than your work. Don't be tied into the point that's the only thing you got going for you. And it's hard to do, but I mean, I've known people in both law enforcement and fire service that's all they got. And it's sad in a way. It's certainly not because the job makes that happen to you. There's ample opportunity out there.
Well, it's sad when something happens and it goes away. That's when it's sad, because people depend on it so much.
And that's what we're seeing now with the bulk of retirements that are starting to happen, that people have been involved in this business since the 70s, and now they're retiring, and they don't really have anything to retire into. They've set themselves up comfortably financially. They've got nice insurance and all the things that we hear about, you know, about public safety employees. But in reality, they don't have anything to fall
into. Well, that's something else, Susan, that might be interesting to cover. just looking at that part of it, but we'll have to save that for another program.
We're going to save that. Mm-hmm. Let me get the website out again, familiesofthefallen.net. That's familiesofthefallens.net, and your phone number is 661-47-1991. That's 661-472-1991, and you're in Michigan, so you're, what, 3 hours away.
Well, thank you so much for sharing with us today. It's been a really interesting program.
Thank you.
And we want to thank David Jay for sitting in for us today on the Slide Pods. That's great.
Well, maybe.
Watching the clock diligently for Ted Adams, Mike Williams on Community Alert. Not if, but when. Positive preparation for disaster. Simulcasting at newspress.com. The news is next on KZSB AM 1290, your Santa Barbara News Press Radio.
This has been Community Alert, not if, but when. Positive preparation for disaster with Ted Adams and Mike Williams. Community Alert is produced by the Wildland Residents Association, San Marcos Pass Volunteer Fire Department, and sponsored by the California Fire Safe Council. Technical support for Community Alert provided by Richard Dugan and Jim Williams. Community Alert, not if, but when. On KZSB AM 1290, your News Press radio station.